Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the program. My name is Simon Barrett, and joining me this week, I have my excellent panel from the very center of the universe, Youngstown, Ohio, author, activist, and barkeep, Sam Morphy. Sam, welcome.
Well, thank you for that wonderful, rousing introduction. I'm waking up from all the turkey that I digested and all the alcohol and all that stuff and all the family, and I'm looking forward for a great show that talks about all the wonderful things that didn't happen at a lot of Walmarts this Friday.
Oh, and are the Browns still clinging on by their...
They're doing their best to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory.
Perfect. It sounds like the Browns. From the City of Angels, well-known and very well-respected attorney, Peter Haven. Peter, welcome.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Simon. It's a pleasure to be here. I look forward to our topic today, as usual.
Oh, I doubt that. I'll change your view in just a couple of minutes.
I look forward to it.
And from New Jersey, my good friend Bill Conrad. Bill, I trust you had a happy Thanksgiving.
It was a fine Thanksgiving. It was probably one of the best I've had in a long time. I'm feeling kind of refreshed, and I'm looking forward to some interesting discussions today.
Okay, well, seeing as we're all it's still in the afterglow of happiness from Thanksgiving, I want to start with a story that sort of has a happy ending. You know, rarely do we get to talk about them. Earlier in the week, Jan and I stumbled upon a news story. Two young kids, 1-9, 1-10, were abducted by their father, a gentleman by the name of Charles Baines, Sr. He had no reason to abduct his children, other than the fact that he's a bit of a whack job. Stole his mother's car, a Kia, and basically hightailed it into Mexico. Now, family abductions, these things happen. But Charles Baines was a little different from the normal guy. Bipolar, drug addict, and has a very fetching tattoo on his left cheek that reads drug cartel. At 6'4 and 270 pounds, definitely not someone that can hide in a crowd. Great news. Yesterday, we heard from the grandmother who was the legal guardian, Judith Baines. Some good Samaritan had rescued the kids and took them to the San Ysidro border crossing. LA sheriffs raced down the highway, picked the kids up. They're now back at home. Charles Baines is supposedly still in Tijuana and living in a two-room shack. He's bipolar. Didn't bother to take his meds with him, but apparently is self-medicating with crystal meth. I mean, whoa! Doesn't that scare the living willies out of you? The story did not make national headlines. Peter, it's from your neck of the woods, but did you hear anything about this?
I really didn't hear anything about it until, you know, you mentioned it a few minutes ago, and then I did a little internet search on it, and the LA Times has been running some pieces on it, but I hadn't heard anything about this, really. I'm just glad everything ended. At least it appears everything ended well.
Oh, indeed. You know, I am so pleased. I don't know quite how Jen manages to get me involved in these stories. But you know, for the last couple of days, you know, I've been sitting on information because I didn't want to screw up the investigation.
Yeah, that's good. Well, apparently they were running all kinds of tips and bulletins in various areas. And, I do recall last week when I was driving around, you know, on the L.A. freeways, we have these big screens that they can put up these amber alerts on. They're called amber alerts. And there was an alert last week about two kids missing, and it did identify a car. And it occurs to me that I did recall seeing that on the freeway, and I remember taking a look at the description of the car and thinking, you know, well, I sure hope they get that guy, or at the time I didn't know who it was, but I sure hope they get that person. And it looks like he's I guess hiding out still at large in Mexico, but the kids are back home safe.
Yep. He's living large in TJ, as it's called, Tijuana. but I doubt for very much longer. Okay, that's my good news story for the week. Oh, well, actually, maybe I have a second good news story for the week. This should get everyone fired up. Government officials are claiming that the Obamacare website is fixed. Peter, you must be so excited.
Well, you know, I'm not unaccustomed to problems with computers and internet websites and technology, so. It doesn't really impact me one way or another. I just think that whenever they tell you any time that something is fixed, that just means it's fixed for this particular moment, and who knows what it's going to be like 2 days from now.
Right. And of course, that segues nicely into President Obama's head cheerleader, Sam Murphy. Sam, what are your thoughts?
I just think the amount of money that they spent on it and all this stuff, and if they would have had with all the high technology we have in this country, and let's face it, with NSA that we've all known that's come out, that the thing would have been working up and running beforehand, that it was improperly tested or whatnot. We all know that now. It's all Monday morning coaching and quarterbacking, as we can say. But, you know, I guess it is discouraging that, you know, at one point this country could put its scientific sources together, its high technology, all the best and the brightest for something that we could put a man on the moon and bring him back. And we can't launch a website, and that's pretty discouraging. Why that happened. Why did it probably happen? Oh, it's probably they you know, the person who got the contract probably was never should have gotten it, but they probably greased the right palm, knew the right people, and thought, hey, what if it goes? It's, you know, I mean, it's like everything in government. So what if it goes wrong? What are you going to do about it? We'll just spend more money at it, and we'll fix it eventually, and we'll put up with all the noise and all the and anybody who attacks it will say that they're naysayers and they're against this and they're that. And really, I think it's really nothing more than just another fraud on the taxpayers. And I think if the Republicans would do stuff like this, it would collapse too. I mean, to me, it's another form $800 toilet seats, $1,000 hammers. It's just, you know, why are we surprised the government effed this up? I mean, we shouldn't be. And hopefully they'll fix it, and those that people will get something that they have to get out of it is affordable health care.
Bill, I know that you and I have talked about health care in the past. Are you feeling more confident now? Okay, stop laughing.
Well, at least I can go on and register. Isn't there a concern that everyone go in and sign up for health care? My health care will kick in somewhere around the first of the year with the new company I'm working for. And I don't know. I still got to sign up for this, right?
That's a big unknown. Yeah, general public is being told, it seems to be a load of BS. You know, my understanding is that if your healthcare is through the company, you don't need to do anything. Yeah, it's only the 30 million people, yeah, that are don't have healthcare through their company. Is that your understanding?
I understood it then, but I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do if I'm uninsured at this moment, but I have healthcare coming. I don't know if I don't sign up for it, if that's a problem. There was nothing clear about that.
Peter, you're the legal legal. Right. What do you make of it? What is your understanding?
Well, first of all, when I was in law school, I must have missed the class on Obamacare. So they weren't offering it that day, or I missed a class or slept in or something, because nothing that I've ever done has ever schooled me or instructed me on the nuances of healthcare. You know, secondly, Sam made an interesting point the other a moment ago, and I just it brought to mind a thought. You know, people often say we can put a man on the moon, but we can't do this and we can't do that. But what people forget is that the early efforts to put a man on the moon were very difficult, and several people died trying to get a man on the moon, and those problems were part of a process of trying to learn how to do something. It's just inherent in any human endeavor. The first efforts are always problematic, and they're riddled with mistakes. Because if something hasn't been done before, it's going to be a problem. Thirdly, just on your point, I really don't know. I have health insurance, and we're in the process of renewing, and it looks like our rates are going to go up. And I think that's really unfortunate, because I do tend to agree with Sam that I think insurance companies are profiting from this and taking advantage of it, which is a shame. Other than that, I just, to me, this is just a process that the nation has to go through, because we need a system where everyone has health insurance and everyone is covered, in some way, and we just can't go on having gaps in healthcare coverage. And this is obviously the first attempt to address that on a national basis. And as we can all see, there's a lot of hiccups along the way, but I do feel confident that just as we did put a man on the moon, despite the fact that we killed several people trying, eventually we're going to get it right.
Sam, a few weeks ago, your lovely wife came on the program and railed about the state of healthcare. What is her view now?
Well, something happened that is kind of changed it, not to even be more negative. I think I might have brought it up before. I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself. But my brother-in-law, someone that's very close to, died, and he lived in Holland, and he was a very wealthy entrepreneur. He paid 60% of his taxes to help. He died at age 73. Very successful man. Peter, you met his son Bart.
Oh yes, wonderful fellow. I'm really sorry.
You were kind enough to show him. You were kind enough to show him. Extend your hospitality. Always appreciate that. Anyway, he paid a lot of money into the system, and in Holland, those that were wealthy also had an ability to get supplemental health insurance. So they were guaranteed a better care because they had paid so much into it, and father took, whatnot. Well, when he got really sick three weeks ago, he did not know what had happened over the last couple of years. The Dutch government had said that was not fair. It was not fair for people who had paid into the system being able to could afford to get better health care coverage or supplemental. Therefore, they eliminated it. So when he got really sick and was operated on, he was stuck in a room with six other people, all of them foreigners and whatnot, all running around. He was very, very sick. He needed peace and quiet. He needed a private room. He had paid for it. He could afford to pay for it, and he couldn't. They just said to my sister-in-law, he ended up, didn't deserve to that type of health care. They took him home where he could die there, have peace and quiet. Because one of the people next to him was a Turkish woman who had like 40 relatives there. And as I told my wife, that's what we're going to turn into. If we don't get this thing right, if this Obamacare, or the Affordable Health Care Act, is not turned around right now, and Peter, I have no problem with what you say, is that this is one of the bumps in the road. That hopefully this bump in the road isn't going to get into the, continue that. One speed bump, that's another speed bump, and be totally screwed with. But if we don't get this turned around, and turned around fast, so people can understand it, and afford it, and continue to get the great health care that this country has, people will suffer, just like my brother-in-law did, and others do. They pay into a system. They think that it's going to be decent. And because the word fairness, there's that, wait a minute, it's not fair that you can get something better. We have to lower the standards so everyone's treated like shit. It's going to happen in this country. I can see that taking place. Ever since my wife came on the show, we've had four different calls from Anthem that she's dealt with. And finally has decided on a plan that basically costs us about $71 more a month than we were paying, but we still have terrible coverage. All we have is catastrophic coverage. We have no dental, we have no vision, what we have is catastrophic. And that's all. We didn't get anything good out of Obamacare, except for $71 more, pains in the ass, paperwork, pain in the ass, to sign up for it and all that, and hoping that the people who do get their arms around this, who are in charge of it, do the right thing and make it better for everybody. Because I believe we should have national health care, but not the way this is going out.
Bill, a question for you. You mentioned that your company was going to be including you in the healthcare plan January 1. Does that include your wife?
Yeah, yes, it does. I'm paying a substantial amount of money to cover my wife and my family, but at least it's somewhat less from some of the private policies that I've looked into so far. I really need to probably go through Obamacare and see if there's something that's comparable to what I'm getting, and maybe it will be at a lower cost, and maybe it'll you know, again, I'm concerned that if I'm on my way to getting health care and that I fill out their paperwork correctly, that I may be accused of a fraudulent submission if as soon as they get everything in order, they decide, oh, I've already got health care and I'm a problem. That's one of my biggest fears of signing up for this now.
Right. The issue I really have is the lack of information about, you know, what Obamacare is. You know, we hear about what it isn't. Yeah, and but, you know, what is it? And, you know, if Obama wants everyone to sign up, surely that there should be a huge media blitz, you know, about how good it is. All I'm seeing is a media blitz about how bad it is. Any thoughts on that, Bill?
Yeah, you haven't been watching MSNBC a lot, Simon.
Oh, God.
That's number one. Number two, I am amazed that CNN has really, really making criticisms of, well, at least when I've watched the show, and I watch a lot during the holidays, I try to watch a lot less news as necessary. I've seen CNN just really hitch their wagon to the anti-Obamacare things and continue to point out all the problems with it, because it must be good for ratings. Because it hasn't rolled out correctly, anything that it has not. I mean, it's easy to file on Obamacare and the continue to one chapter or another, and they haven't been able to fix anything. So now they're just looking for it. But you're right, because on the point you bring up, Simon, is okay, the website stinks, the implementation of it stunk, the planning of it stunk, but is the concept a good idea? And I think it is a good idea. It's having flexible health care, and then can use it. I mean, I don't see that happening because when Ralph Nader, and I listened to one of the two people who read the bill, came out and said the problem with the Affordable Care Act is it was written by the insurance companies, for the insurance companies, and of the insurance companies, with the politicians, both parties, the bureaucratic party, for the most part, driving a getaway car. It is not. It's a great idea in theory to have national health care, but not when you have the wolves writing the policy, and that it's not consumer friendly, and therefore it's going to be very expensive for all consumers eventually, and that's bad, you know. And I do want this thing turned around. I want a 180 done on it. I'm more concerned with getting people affordable national health care. That should be the number one priority than squawking about how bad the website is. But I guess it's easier to squawk about how bad the website is.
You know, again, citing your wife, she and me were in agreement that other countries had better systems. Do you still agree with that sentiment based on...
No, not after after we found out what's going on with Holland. Now, can I comment on Holland? spoken to anybody with scale other countries, and I kind of not going to speculate about it. But in Holland, where people, which used to be the model, is not the model anymore. And again, with the B word being as the my sister-in-law was a nurse, told my wife Juliette that it came down to was the government of Holland, because under the onslaught of the do-gooders, the social engineers, decided that it has to be a question of fairness, and that's more important than it is of any, you know, better. They took what was a good system, and then we've seen this happen with many, many governments, many, many businesses, many, many people, where they have to continue to think, they can't leave it alone. They have to shape it. They have to change it. But sometimes you have to do things. So, you know, we have to be adaptable, or we'll be like the dinosaurs. But when you start to make a system of healthcare, the more important issue is fairness, not getting quality healthcare. Quality healthcare is being thrown out the window for the word fairness. You know, I mean, is it fair that my brother-in-law paid hundreds of thousands of dollars in his life into a system to get health care for all these people who didn't pay a diddly squat into it, yet they both got equal health care? Okay, is that fair? For some people might say yes, some people might say no. But obviously when his time came to get better health care, he thought he was going to be afforded it, to get paid for it. The answer was no, because that wouldn't be fair to the Turkish immigrants who just came in. So, I mean, that's what scares me about what could happen in this country, because we have a lot of people who run around playing the race card, and now, you know, if it's not the race card, the new card now is the economic card, you know, the one percenters, we have to take from the cake without giving anything. People just want to hand it to them. And there's more of them than there are people who are making things. And, you know, Mitt Romney's comment, you know, it was a stupid comment for politicians, but it was the right comment about what's really going on. And the data backs them up. That's what's scary. There are more people dependent on government right now, and to the point where they don't want to get off their asses. Why should they? In the old days, people used the government handouts, welfare, all those things as a crutch. It was a bridge. It was a trampoline. It was something to help them get back up on their feet and get things going. And because now it's the way of life. Why would you give that up? I mean, you've got people collecting unemployment because that's better than going out and getting a job. That's sad. Okay. What do you set up to be that way?
All right. That segues nicely into something I saw on the news about Walmart. They're the largest, retailer in the country, and there were some grumpy news pieces about a Walmart store that had a box set up, asking for donations to, make associates, happy this Thanksgiving. Put your cans in. I'm appalled. And the story's been picked over 8 ways to Sunday. And, a popular thought is, Walmart might be a huge employer, but because they're, paying minimum wage, many people are actually getting supplemented by government. I'll use the term handouts. Did you see that story, Sam?
Yes. I think that Walmart is, maybe we're talking about the same thing, but Walmart made more money, makes more money from those welfare debit cards, whatever, EBT cards, whatever they're called, than any other company in America. Is that what we're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Walmart itself makes more money off allowing, well, I guess those are food stamps now, right? They're called EBT cards. No one gets food stamps anymore, it's my understanding. You get a little credit card. Is that correct? Maybe you guys can help me out here.
The story is that that there are more Walmart employees, on EBT cards
But I believe it. They don't work 40 hours. They don't pay diddly squat. And they force their employees to work on Thursday and Friday. I mean, I'm amazed in Youngstown, in Boardman, which is a suburb adjacent to me before Youngstown, we made the news because we had a stabbing and a shooting on Black Friday because of these people fighting over parking spots closer to the entranceway. And I know there was hundreds of them all across America, and it's despicable. And it seemed the bulk of them took place at Walmart, although my one son showed me when Macy's opened up their door Thursday or Friday for the first time ever, I think it was Thursday, it looked like the zombies coming. They showed it on film. He had it on film on YouTube. It looked like the zombies were, the way they were walking and marching in. And, I'm sure all you guys, if you took a few minutes out to watch the news on Friday and Saturday, have seen all the horror stories of people spitting and shooting and police officers shot and people killed. And all this, and the bulk of them happened at Walmart. And it's utterly amazing that it's a holiday that used to mean so much for people, for tradition, the Norman Rockwell American way, the Thanksgiving dinner, people come home from college, people come back to their, it's almost like a homecoming for many, many people, many, many different ages. There's more reunions held this weekend than any other weekend during the year. And it's a festival time, it's a drinking and eating and fun time. And what have we got now? Everyone's pushing for shopping. And to the point that it started on Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, I could not believe how many people were out in the roads. I could not believe how many people were going out to dinner early so they could hit the stores Thursday night. And
Peter, I seriously doubt that you went Black Friday shopping. But doesn't it appall you that, we can change from, being a community that is all about, friends and family to, WWF fighting?
Yeah, it's terrible, but this is something that, I've seen out here. I saw it during the riots after the Rodney King verdicts. People were rioting in the streets, but at the same time they were rioting in the streets, they were breaking into stores and they were stealing things. And the kinds of things that they were stealing were the kinds of things that were prevalent on the TV at the time. They were stealing Suzanne Summers Thigh Masters and George Foreman grills and things like that. And all of that is just to say that this is, in my opinion, the great crisis of capitalism. And everything that we talk about in one way or another seems to me to come back to the crisis of living in a capitalistic culture. Most of these people are brainwashed into thinking that these are the things they need to have to have a good life. And they believe it, and they get brainwashed into believing that they have to get up on Friday morning after Thanksgiving and go race down to the stores and fight with each other for great deals because that's the great day to get great deals. And it's absurd. It's crazy. But that's what our society has programmed them to do. And, you know, we keep talking about the same theme over and over again. Sam says something that I think is quite correct. I when he talked about the wolves minding the store with respect to insurance, I agree that trying to come up with a national health care plan is a very important thing to do. But unfortunately, the insurance companies view it as an opportunity to take advantage of an inelastic supply. You know, the insurance companies think, well, everybody's going to have to buy health care insurance, so we're going to take advantage of it. We're going to raise our rates. That's economics. That's capitalism. When the demand goes up, the price goes up. And it's the same thing with, you know, Black Friday and people fighting and trying to kill each other at stores to try to get deals, because that's the culture we live in. They've been brainwashed into thinking they need to buy things by people who make money off of them buying things. And the thing that moves the world everywhere is the pursuit of the dollar. And eventually, when you value the dollar above all else, pretty soon all you're going to have are dollars. You're not going to have humanity anymore. You're going to lose humanity in the process. And we're in the process of basically, in my opinion, as bleak and as pessimistic as it sounds, I think we're in the process of destroying our world and destroying each other and poisoning each other and contaminating each other and taking advantage of each other and ripping each other off. And eventually, you know, somebody's going to have a whole lot and a lot of other people are going to suffer, in my opinion.
Okay. Bill, do you have any comments on that comment?
Well, one of the things that that surprised me so much was the actual what were people mostly fighting over at Walmart. You know, you'd think it would be TVs, you think it would be video games, you think it might be some inexpensive movie or media. This year, on Black Friday, the number one item that people had fist fights over were towels. 2.8 million dollars worth of towels were sold, and only $2 million worth of televisions were sold this year. So your typical aggressive Walmart shopper is fighting his neighbor over towels.
I am
I don't even
away.
Know what to do with that.
that is definitely the statistic of the week.
Absolutely.
You know,
at least fight over sale turkey or cranberry sauce, but it's towels.
I would love to see the the raw data on that, because that really does blow me away.
Well, I don't even know what to do with that. It's just, again, it's a sad commentary on the American public and how, again, is it brainwashing or are we just gullible or what is it?
And don't forget the corporations buy ads on the television show stations. So the television stations, if you've noticed, very few people in the media look frown upon Black Friday. They brag about it. Oh, Black Friday, it's going to be great for the stores, great for the economy. Wall Street, I guarantee you Wall Street's up 500 points tomorrow if Black Friday's numbers were good. Okay? And it just benefits. So, all, you know, so we know the media is not going to be effective in reporting Black Friday. They'll report, local media will report, like what happened, we had a stabbing and a shooting. But it's not getting any play nationwide. Some places will pick up on it. It's not the lead story. The lead story will be $50 million worth of towels were sold. Not 35 people were stampeded, beaten, hurt, stabbed. I heard about this one incident I saw on the BBC that was reporting incidents in America that two mothers started spitting on each other's kids over clothes. I don't know if it was
oh,
no. power, but it's spitting on each other.
Oh, my gosh.
Good.
Well, I heard about a taser gun battle. That was the most interesting one to me.
Oh, yes. The two women, I think it was in Philadelphia, that got into a tussle, and one of them brought out taser.
Well, that leads me to it. That leads me to another question. When I hear about these fights at over shopping, I can't help but think. I mean, is there any gender breakdown on this? Is it mostly women fighting with women, or is it men fighting with men, or men and women fighting each other? Is it across the board?
I can speak from personal experience. I mean, there is no.
Oh no!
I would go out on Black Friday. So I can't speak from personal experience.
I just got to tell you, there's no way in heck I'm going to go shopping on the Friday after Thanksgiving. I mean, I'm just not doing it. And I don't know if that's, to me, it invariably seems that women are going out shopping on a Friday. I'm not going to do it. I don't know anybody else who does it, but maybe I'm wrong about that. I am a bit of a antisocial recluse these days. What do I know?
So, Peter, it brings up, my family, with this topic of conversation, and I've been at the table on Thanksgiving, was, are we part of a dying tradition, my family, everyone coming home for holiday, whether it's to my house or whatever, one of the kids' houses as we get older and all this, and having a traditional Thanksgiving dinner, and then just enjoying each other, catching up on stuff, playing with you. Are we the dying breed? And all of us agree, yes. And as we talked to our friends in the snap, we knew a lot that it's going to be less and less people. And that's something stopped in our culture and society. Brainwash is a great word to use, Peter. But I think the traditional family dinner on Thursday is going to be a dying breed. It's not because I predict that this will happen in the next 5 years. It's going to be Black Friday. It already is Black Thursday now. It will be Black Wednesday. And then pretty soon Walmart will serve buffet food on Thursday to get people into their stores faster.
Well,
mark my word.
I think that's a brilliant idea, and it would replace the modern-day soup kitchen. They would have their own Thanksgiving meal all day long where they'd feed you, and you could come in, and they'd keep – I think that's a brilliant idea. I think that is coming. You're absolutely right.
I think the problem with that is that they're going to ask the poor – of Walmart to donate their food in order to feed all the customers. I think that's the sad part.
Well, the bad part is, but that's the my. Thumbs out. My one's in New York. My one's in LA. The weekend. Then she's from Columbus. She took them out for a Thanksgiving Day lunch. And my youngest son texted me and he said, "Dad, can't believe how many people are at this restaurant." It was like 12:30 or whatnot, and listening to them talk about why they were out. And I said, "Well, yeah, family, whatever." He goes, "No, they wanted to eat so they could get to the stores on Thursday night." That's what that. Those are conversations you overheard. That people were planning what stores they were going to get, and that's when I said, "I'm like, it's just a matter of time before all these stores, because the people." The suits, the bean counters, Wall Street is going to say, how do we get these people in the store faster? My competitor is doing it. My competitor might do it. I've got to do it. And it goes back to what Peter said earlier, the dollar bills are more important than the traditions, and we're seeing it. I mean, I was amazed. I mean, guys, it's just December 1st. Okay, we just celebrated Thanksgiving. I could not, last weekend, when I had to go and get a few extra items for Thanksgiving, with all Christmas stuff up everywhere, in supermarkets and this and that, and all, they're shoving Christmas down our throats. And we've been seeing this. We've all seen it coming. All four of us are intelligent people. We've all been out in the world. We all have friends, associates. We've all seen this coming. As we've grown older, we've all seen this coming, the commercialization of everything. And to the point that now we should not be shocked. I guess I'm shocked it hasn't happened more. But I think it happens a lot more. We just don't hear about it so much.
Okay. I want to switch gears, if that's okay. All right. I'm fed up with Black Friday and Thanksgiving, and I'm already fed up with Christmas. All right. So let's move on to politics. Sam, just how scared should the Democrats be that are up for re-election in 2014?
I think all Democrats and all Republicans should be shitting in their pants about the re-election chances in 2014, based upon a couple of things. But if Obamacare doesn't get turned around and start to roll out in a positive way that's beneficial to the citizens of this country, they're gonna pay for it at the polls. Vice versa, both sides that are promoting this massive invasion of our privacy that's getting worse and worse as the stuff leaks out, NSA, and all that sort of stuff, I think you're going to see a massive backlash against people who are very pro-big government, big brother. And then, of course, I'm going to say the magic one. Politics is a year from now. There's an eternity in politics. There's an issue coming that none of us know what it is, and it's going to happen. It could be a war somewhere. It could be what if Obamacare turns out to be the greatest thing since sliced bread? The Republicans who stood up against it on a big level. I mean, the pendulum swings both ways. But there's going to be some issue that we don't know about. It's going to come out, and it's going to be one party's going to benefit from it, and one's going to pay the turn. Although I do think this the one thing that's going to hurt both parties, and it's going to be how they respond to it, is the Middle East. The Middle East continues to be a powder keg and a half. Right before I got on the show, I see that there's riots in Egypt, and they're getting worse. We have the nuclear thing in Iran that really no one knows. We hope it's a good thing. I'm not optimistic, but, you know, I'm not optimistic about anything that the bad guys do, you know. And there's just so much unrest out in the world. I don't know if anybody saw the protests in Kiev. Did anybody happen to catch those?
Yes, I did.
With the construction workers who driving bulldozers into the police? When is the last time you ever see that happen? Well, that's the French Revolution. That's the American Revolution. That's the Russian Revolution. People are pissed off. And, Peter, you brought up a point about Simon, I have to bring up this, and then I'm going to shut my mouth and listen to the other guests, about the dollar. You know, people, oh, I'm sorry, Bill, you did too, about fighting over towels. And you know what popped into my mind? What's going to happen if they have to wait in line for bread and water? Could you imagine what people in our country would do if they had to wait in line to get bread and water?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm done.
Well, I'm not sure. I guess what concerns me is that if you have people fighting over bread and water and they're not getting their basic needs met, then that means that corporate America has just fallen apart, because I think the opposite fear is what's going to happen. I think that if, for example, we ran out of water, corporations would come up with some sort of fluid electrolyte replacement, and they would charge us, you know, $2 or $3 a 6 ounce container for it, and they'd find some way to feed the market, so to speak, and gouge money out of the consumer, regardless of whether they were really providing anything of value or not. So I think for me the risks are going in the opposite direction. The risks are that eventually corporations just become one and the same with government, and it's really just about finding ways to pull dollars out of people's pockets at whatever cost it might entail.
Hasn't that already happened?
It's definitely happening, and I foresee it's going to get worse.
How can it be fixed?
This is where my fundamental pessimistic nature about things like this just completely fails humanity, because I don't see any hope of fixing it. It's a bit like a storm. How can you stop the storm? You can't. All you can do is batten down the hatches and survive the wind and waves and hope you get through it. But I think it's becoming increasingly difficult, and I think that the deck is going to get increasingly stacked in favor of a few and against many.
Sam, I'm sure you probably agree with Peter.
Yes, very much so. Although I didn't mean they run out of bread. I didn't mean that they would run out of bread and water. I mean they'd have to be a time to get bread and water.
Yeah.
The government ran out of money, and they still needed to get. They have to go down to the soup wherever it has to be to get theirs. That's what I mean. When Bill brings up the mental image of people fighting over towels, it's mind-boggling. So I'm thinking to myself, could you imagine if and we've seen it, you know, when these horrific storms go up, Hurricane Sandy, people were fighting over stuff like Katrina. So it's like, now, those were all disasters that no one was expecting to be as bad as they were. But what if it's a financial disaster of government runs out of money? And the people who are used to getting the EBT card, now they don't get their EBT card. They have to go wait in line at the food depot where the military has to pass out a loaf of bread and a jug of water to the family. Can you imagine? We all know human nature. And I think all of us, four of us, agree that the potential is there based upon the income gap in this country and based upon how money isn't getting to how the majority of, you know, and I go, and we all listen to other people, we all talk to other people, we all have friends, we all have families, we're all well-read, we all listen to stuff, we all know out there that it isn't the rosy picture that a lot of people like to portray it as. We know, for instance, my son graduates 2 weeks ahead with his master's of SUNY journalism, and he was saying how difficult he's trying to find a job. He's having a really hard time to find something, and he's lucky he doesn't have that much debt. He's got friends who are graduating with $100,000 to $180,000 worth of college loan debt.
Whoa.
Lucky enough to find, now remember, that's undergrad and master's, okay? Right. Because, you know, where they went to, it depends on where they went to school. Some went to Ivy League school. A lot of them also, I was unaware of this, they get loans not just to go to the tuition. They also get the loan to live off the loans. They might pay the rent with the loan money. And then they have to do other stuff just to keep going. And going into journalism now, Simon, as you all know, is not a, unless you really know somebody, it's a tough thing to get into. And it doesn't pay that well at the entry level.
Even if you know someone, it's not going to pay squat.
No, he's telling me he had professors who worked, they did research for the New York Times, okay, and at SUNY. They were getting paid. They've been cut back, and they said anything that they use that the writer, the journalist uses, or the paper uses, or the editor, they get. They get 50 cents a word. How do you, so they, it's not even worth their time anymore to try to write something, do some research, assist in someone, because we're all freelancers now. They're all freelancers, and they're all fighting like cats and dogs to you know, get their, you know, stuff finished, edited. And so that's going on. So and he was also talking to me about, you know, take the city of Manhattan, you know, how many people are there, and use that as your metaphor. There's so many people working there illegally. There's so many people, you know, just and all, everyone's just living to make ends meet. They're just getting enough pay. He said most of his friends and his people who are working in the entry level, I see it now, but, you know, most of my workers, people I talk to, they can't put any money away anymore. And it's not because they don't want to. It's just the cost of gasoline, the cost of natural gas, the property taxes go to beat the boop the bop. And as me, as a business person, I can only raise my prices up so high, or pretty soon no one's going to come in the doors. And it's getting outrageous, and, you know, and then I have to deal with the corporate landlord I have, who does it says tough shit. Rent's going up. You know, and that's the way it is. You know, it's a struggle for everybody. It used to not be. I mean, now it's really, really. I've never seen so many people that I've met, very successful people too, who are living paycheck to paycheck or deal to deal, depending on what they may do. If they can't sell their house, they're in big trouble. If they can't refinance it, you know, make a deal, and you can only do your house. I see people who I knew better, who weathered the housing bubble of 2008 for whatever reason. Now they're doing what others did. They're desperate for money right now because the interest rates are so low. They're going to do the same thing again. You know, they didn't do it before. Now they have to do it to help make ends meet. I can't tell you how many finance companies call me and want me to get advances on my credit card sales.
What are they trying to get you to do, Sam?
Okay, I do about $35,000 a month in credit card sales. Okay, it's a pattern. My average over the last 3 years is $35,000 MasterCard, Visa, Discovery, and American Express. I get swamped with these finance companies saying, we will give you, based upon that, $80,000 right now. We'll give you $80,000, and you'll take out 31% a day to pay back. 31%. That's how much they want to charge.
Well,
I know a lot of bar owners who are doing it.
There's an incentive, they figure, because somebody must be cash-strapped. They've got to pay off a drug dealer or something.
No, I tell you what they think. They're getting the money at what would they be getting the money at, Peter? 1% maybe? 2%?
Yeah, I don't know. Certainly nothing like 31%. That's
right.
Crazy.
So they're getting money at X. If you're paying it back at 31%, get a profits. You know, so they control the credit card. The credit card money goes right into the account. You have to sign it over to them. They'll take this right off the top and shoot you back the remainder of the daily proceeds to be paying back. And I know a lot of people doing it.
Well. What can I say? I mean, it sounds scary to me, but I guess a lot of people are interested in getting that quick buck. I don't know.
Well, you know, the other thing I see now is, Simon, I think you said you've seen some too. How about getting a loan on your title? Put your auto title in and we'll give you a loan.
Oh, I just love this one.
that one blew me away.
Right. It's something like 300% interest rate.
Oh, right. You know what they do? Because I checked it out, I had it. They don't give you a loan against the equity in your car. They'll give you exactly what – they'll take your title, and that's the collateral, and they'll give you exactly the amount of what your net paycheck is.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll have a lien on your car.
Right.
But guess what happens if you don't pay your little – And people, I drive by them, they're three deep in the store.
Oh, yeah. Well,
it's amazing to me.
everyone is so strapped for cash. And the great American middle class is disappearing faster than you can shake a fist at. That there's the very poor and the very rich. But there is no middle class.
Well, I don't know. I keep hearing that expression that we're losing the middle class. To me, it seems like the middle class is actually expanding, and the class of impoverished people is expanding. It's just that the quality of life in both, I'm not sure where it's going, but there's the class of ultra rich who are accumulating everything. Is disproportionate, to me that seems like the real concern, but I don't watch demographics for these things, so that's just a sense I have of things.
Okay, I'm going to move on because I'm looking at the clock. Let's talk about the NSA. There was a couple of stories I read earlier this week. Edward Snowden has a doomsday file. And even though the NSA had claimed that he doesn't have the crown jewels, shall we say, this makes me wonder, Sam, is there a possibility that Snowden is going to unleash the crown jewels?
Oh, I hope so. I hope so. I think. Well, and that's one that we talked about is, and regardless of what. We're starting to find out through his super patriot Edwin Snowden and what he's done. When the NSA still continues to reach into our lives to the point that I'm going to be labeled a terrorist because I might look at porn one day, and because of my good friend Simon having the Blogger News Network blog a story about how I think government is inefficient and incompetent, needs to do a better job at taking care of the people. And I happened to take a look at some girls' big boobs on, line. The NSA agents are spying on me. And then they'll cross-reference my blogging on Blogger News Network with my fact that I like to stare at biggins, as Al Bundy called them. And all of a sudden, they'll put a post on my Facebook page, Sam Moss, who looks at porn sites.
That's
what the NSA is doing. So regardless of what Snowden has blown the whistle, right? He woke up America, those that wanted to be awakened. But instead of the NSA reining back, right, and government saying, hey, wait a minute, what's going on here? They paraded a couple of generals in front of everybody with all the big chests full of medals. They said, hey, we're not doing that bad. Don't worry. Trust us. We're trying to catch the bad guys. We're going to catch the bad guys. We've caught the bad guys. And we've not seen any proof of that other than, yes,
Sam, you're rushing ahead and maybe a little too fast for our listeners and maybe the other people on the panel. As I understand it, the NSA is tracking terrorists via their use of porn sites. Am I correct?
That allegedly is correct. I don't know many Arabs who. See, this is where I get really confused, Simon. Maybe you can help me. It's my understanding the Al Qaeda people want women to dress in a circus tent and never show any of their sexuality. So why would men who want to keep women in the dark ages be on porn sites?
Well,
you're asking
an interesting question, but the real question is, why would investigation of people's porn activities, how would that help NSA counterintelligence efforts? And the reason that was advanced, I don't know if it's correct or not, but that these bits of information could be used to discredit the credibility of some of these Middle East or insurgent leaders, and by discrediting them, it might erode their power and their ability to have any kind of effective control over whatever organization they presided in. At least that
okay.
was the stated theory.
So you're trying to tell me that if Sheikh A is trying to rally his Al-Qaeda cell into a real gung-ho anti-American jihad, but Sheikh has during the day, and at night, Sheikh A is surfing porn sites, okay? And the NSA finds that out, knows that Sheikh A is really doing nothing but porn at night. They're going to get that information to his members, and it's going to discredit him from being a true believer. I'm trying to make sure I understand what you're saying.
Well, in theory, it would discredit him from it would discredit his followers from following him as a leader, and it would therefore erode his leadership. And basically, the idea is, you know, if you don't have to, it's a form of political assassination. You know, you destroy his credibility, you destroy his leadership, and then he's no longer the leader. And guess what? That's every day in American politics. Isn't that what everybody's fighting about on CNN and Fox News every day, over whose credibility is what and who we try to character assassinate in one form or another?
Oh, no, I agree with you, and I was just saying it's an interesting point you bring up.
Yeah, I mean, that's the theory.
My theory is, I'll take it differently, that if they can do that for an alleged terrorist, they could also do it for political opponents, not alleged terrorists. Okay, and in that case, Anthony Weiner would have been in big trouble, right, Simon?
I got nothing against the guy.
But sick of what that power could do in the hands of the wrong people. I mean, Peter, I get the
what's that? I think it's always true that whenever we have any form of power, whatever it is, when you put it in the hands of the wrong people, you have a problem. And that's just an inherent fact of life, and I don't know what to do about it except try to keep power out of the hands of the wrong people. But the problem is that power has a way of bringing out the worst in people too. So it's a terrible problem. But you're absolutely right. In the hands of the wrong people or people who abuse it, you've got real problems.
Okay. I'm going to throw a question out, because I think I asked it earlier. Does Edward Snowden have a doomsday file? The NSA claims he doesn't have the crown jewels, but more and more I'm hearing he might just have the crown jewels. How scary is this going to be for, security and the NSA? Sam, you want to try that one?
I think he has it. So far he hasn't let me down. And I think he has let a lot of people down. And unfortunately, the poor guy is. We live in a society where the messenger is shot now and abused and kicked and pinched and punched and just vilified. And when we really need to listen, the messenger, excuse me, and we need to listen to this message. I hope he does have it, and I hope he exposes everything. To me, this is the modern version. This is the Watergate all over again on a different level. where abuse of the power that we did not know about. I didn't know this stuff happened. I didn't know there was an NSA. I thought that's what the CIA did, or the FBI, or the ATF, or the... I can't believe we have a group and another group and another group. But we do. And they have a secret court, and they do all this sort of stuff. So I'm glad this has come out. I'm glad I'm a little more educated about it. I'm very worried of our country because it makes our government more dangerous. We all think they can control us through our computers and what we do and what we search and whatnot. If they're using it to catch pedophiles and all the bad, I'm all for that. Do it for the right things. It's great. But as Peter just said, it must be me. I'm very cynical. I'm very wary of these governments in control of this stuff to do the wrong thing with it, which Snowden has already proven. We're spying on our allies. I mean, I think no one would ever believe we'd ever spy on Merkel's phone or this or that, but obviously we were. And are they spy? Are the Germans mad because their spy network isn't as good as our network? And that's what they were really pissed off about, that they couldn't catch us spying on them? Or were they really pissed that we violated some sort of protocol and did that? I don't know, but I think Snowden has a lot more to go, and that's one reason why I'm sure that's one reason why Russia gave him asylum.
There is a story floating around that the motherlode, shall we say, has been highly encrypted, and should anything happen, it's going to be unleashed. I can't imagine what the mother load might be, but I'm sure the NSA won't particularly enjoy it.
It's not just the NSA. It's my understanding that both British and U.S. intelligence officials are worried about a cache or a store of additional security data or information that this contractor may have obtained. And yes, the reports are that it's heavily encrypted, and to me, that just means that if you gave it to somebody, say, for instance, the Russians or anybody, and you gave them enough time, they would find a way to crack it. And both British and U.S. officials are concerned about the safety of intelligence people throughout the world. And we've all heard stories about how intelligence people are exposed in hostile environments, and they face potential death. And so, in that manner, it's not really akin to Watergate. It's not like exposing snooping by your political adversary. It's potentially putting people in harm's way. And I think that, they're going to have to take steps to prepare for it. And I think that if the data, encrypted or not, is in the hands of someone else right now, even if it's Snowden, it's effectively compromised in any event, and it's just a matter of time before the encryptions or whatever they are broken. So I think that the intelligence community, both here and in England, has to react to it and account for it. And, I don't know what's going to happen, but, I don't view Snowden as a great hero. I think I think he's going to end up being a very sad figure in life because, the Russians they know exactly what they've gotten. They've gotten a guy who's basically a snitch, and they'll keep him and control him. And I don't think he'll have a home to go home to anywhere. I think, ironically, he's made his own bed and now he's going to have to sleep in it, and I don't think it's going to be very comfortable.
I am in absolute agreement with you. In the 70s, I was involved with a UK government site. I have signed the Official Secrets Act you know, Eight Ways to Sunday. I still don't really talk about it. That was my choice. I made the decision, and no, I wasn't 007. All right? Yeah, I was just, you know, a kid, you know, playing with computers. I think people need to, you know, make their plans, understand what it is they're doing, and move on with their lives. I don't like what Snowden is doing. I really don't care for what WikiLeaks is doing. Yeah, there's a certain amount of titillation, shall we say. But it really doesn't it doesn't drive me. I doubt that any of you have been in the same situation, but you know, I for one think that, you know, if you go for you know, something, you should honor it. And
I tend to agree. I mean, he was a military contractor. He had certain levels of clearances and authority. I don't know how much, but, you know, all I can keep thinking of is an expression that a criminal law attorney that I work with a lot says, and he says it a lot. He says, nobody likes a snitch. And, you know, when you turn into a snitch, you know, you basically alienate everyone in the end, because the cops now know what you are, the bad guys now know what you are, and anybody who was close to you now knows what you are. And you basically know that you can't be trusted. And they may use you and take advantage of you and grind what they can out of you, but they never, ever, ever forget that you're a snitch. Nobody does. And it's one thing, I think, you know, in my mind, I keep comparing this to the paralegal who stole the work product memoranda that supposedly exposed the tobacco industry. And, you know, it's interesting. It's, you know, one man's act of being a snitch is another man's act of being a hero. And I guess I don't know where we draw the lines. I guess everyone has to keep their own moral compass. But, you know, for me, doing something to try to save lives might be forgivable. But doing something that exposes other people, puts people in harm's way, to me is not very forgivable. And I just feel at the end that Snowden is going to be his own worst enemy, and that his fate's not going to be a very happy one. You know, I wouldn't want to be living in Russia as a refugee and political asylee, escaping any country because you know, I had revealed their secret details. I think they own you after that, and they will own you lock, stock, and barrel.
Yeah. Actually, Peter, I am in total agreement. I think the only rebuttal I would have is that oftentimes people sign agreements and do not understand the ramifications.
Yeah.
You know, in my case, I understood the ramifications, right? So,
people tend to think that the end justifies the means. And when you're young, and my impression of Snowden is, I don't know what age he is, but he seems young to me. You sometimes, you know, you don't make good decisions, in my opinion. And and it ends up costing you dearly in life. And it's just an unfortunate lesson. There are consequences to things that you do, and you know, you're gonna have to pay the piper one way or another. And it can be a very cruel lesson to learn. But you're exactly right, Simon. Some people, they don't understand the consequences, or they can't imagine that the consequences would be as severe as they are. But all that is to say that they just don't take the consequences seriously enough. And I think that some of these things are very serious, and they really need to consider what they're doing before they do it.
Bill, you've been kind of quiet. Any thoughts?
Well, I pretty much agree with what Peter has said, and that Mr. Snowden has found now that he has married himself to Russia. And I think that this unholy marriage that he has put himself into is probably set himself up where he can't go on to somebody else. I don't think anyone else will pick him up, and the problem is once they've gotten all the information from him and revealed and figured out all the nastiness that's there, there's nothing he's going to be able to do for his negotiation as far as anything else. He is married to them for the rest of their life, and if they get tired of him, they will in some way divorce him, which may mean that they just leave him vulnerable out there so that anyone can take him out. He's destroyed all these lives. He potentially is going to be able to destroy all these lives of all these people. And all these documents have probably bits and pieces of people's names. There may be things that he took that he felt was really important, but contained within those documents, there's even more security breaches that he had intended revealing. And I think that a piece of the results of this is that we're going to end up giving up our rights even more. They're going to say, we don't want to have another thing like this. We don't want to leave ourselves vulnerable. And so it's okay for us to look at somebody's web browsing history and put that in a big file. And if you, Simon, are out at a certain evangelical Christian site that turns bad, then they're going to associate you with that and say, you know what, back in 10 years ago, you were involved in looking at this site, and this is a bad thing, and so now we're going to have to destroy your life. So by having all these records of what everyone has done, something that is pretty benign today could turn into being name of security for the United States and the government.
Okay, and Sam, I'm sure you have something to say on this.
Well, someone has to take the opposite viewpoint here, and I'm going to take it. I think he's a hero. I think this is not Benedict Arnold. This is not the Rosenbergs. This is not people who approve of Jonathan Pollard. This is not a member of the Weathermen. This is a guy who tried to sell secrets to a foreign government to destroy it and whatnot. This is a guy who's exposed what the American government is doing to its own people. To me, he's a hero because Americans now can question the government and say, this is what they want. Now, I'm not saying, don't stop doing this stuff in secret, Mr. Republican administration, Mr. Democratic administration. Do it out in public and then tell us what it's about, okay? This is why we're doing it, and let the American people decide if this is the type of government they want. And if they vote for that, then they vote for it. But at least they know about it instead of being spied upon, and it's probably worse. And I liken this to, I like whistleblowers, okay? I'm sure there's a lot of Native Americans who wish someone would have whistleblown what Manifest Destiny really was in Washington to the treaties that were broken with them in the late 19th century. Okay, I'm sure a lot of people would like to have known what was in store for them by this wonderful, benevolent government of ours that has been nothing about taking care of itself and those that are associated with it. Or when the railroads were coming through, I'm sure people would love to have known where the railroads were going, going to buy up that land, but it really was. But they never knew that the railroads were buying up the land with the effect of government grants and whatnot, and certain politicians have been paid off for that. I'm sure it would have been great if whistleblowers would have existed back then, and people would have realized what was going on.
Let me ask you a question, Sam.
That's why I come from. What?
If I may, let me ask you a question. If you could hire Snowden to be your general manager at your establishment there, would you do it?
Yes.
Well,
yes.
You're a better man than I am. You're a better man than I am.
You know, listen, I think he's a hero. I think he is. He's was Deep Throat a hero or is he a bad guy, Peter?
Pardon me, who?
Deep Throat from the Watergate, from Nixon, inside Nixon's.
Oh,
I think his name is Mark. I believe his name is Mark Felt. Is that right, Simon?
Yes.
And what was his role?
FBI agent.
He was an FBI agent, so he was planted in there on an undercover operation.
Well, Mark Felt was giving insider information that the FBI had in the Nixon White House and everything to Bob Woodward illegally, just like Snowden. He was a whistleblower in a different way. And Woodward used it to piece it together to expose what Nixon was about, the unconstitutionality of it. Was Mark Felt doing the wrong thing? I mean, what if Snowden was giving? If Snowden was doing this like Mark Felt did it, the Deep Throat with the hat in the garage and the flower pot with the flag on the thing to the reporter, would that be okay? If he was doing
it, but you know, I guess. I might have more respect for Snowden if, with full knowledge of what he was doing and with a belief in the rightness of it, if he had been willing to stay here in the United States and accept all the consequences of doing what he was doing simply to bring attention to the cause and say, look, I know I'm breaking the rules here, but I think it's important and I want everybody to see it and I'm willing to suffer all the consequences. But it seems to me that what he did was suffer all the consequences and then try to evade. He broke all the rules and then he tried to evade all the consequences. And
okay, gentlemen, I hate to do this. We're almost out of time. It is time to go once around the table and get everyone's final thoughts. And Peter, I'm going to start with you.
Well, all I could do is pick up on my last thought and I'll forego my usual. We still got a lot of problems to solve, but this talk of Snowden reminds me of Johnny Manziel, who was a college football player who got in trouble recently because he was trying to break the NCAA's rules about getting paid. And everybody said, well, Johnny should get paid. He's a great football star, and he should get paid for signing autographs. And they tried to position him as a champion of that right. But the problem I had with that is that Johnny denied ever doing it and told people to lie about it and cover up for him. So he really wasn't an advocate for anybody but himself. And so that's sort of what comes to my mind when we talk about this Snowden situation. But we shall see, because time is the ultimate test of everything, and we're all going to be judged by history. And rightly or wrongly, as Sam said earlier, those people who for or against Obamacare may also be on the right or wrong side of things as they go. So I look forward to seeing how it all unplays.
Sam.
I hope everybody had a wonderful, blessed Thanksgiving. I thank you for this opportunity to talk about stuff. It's great. Simon, I'm also learning how to do my second, how to save a column that I start as a draft on your very complicated blog and news network. I'm learning how to use it, and it's going to be good. It's a great thing. I appreciate that and the opportunity. I'll tell you one thing I'm going to do. I am going to go stock up on towels, because that must be the next new scarcity that's going to happen in our country.
And Bill?
I agree with you. I was thinking of setting myself up with a toll-free number of it. We could call it something like WalmartSafeTowels.com, in which you could buy it online and you wouldn't have to get into the fist fight. Maybe Sam, I can work with you and we can come up with that. It's just an idea.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but it reminds me of the South Park character known as Towley, and you guys need to look up Towley on South Park, okay?
Okay, we're flat out of time. I do want to thank you all for taking time to talk to me today, and hopefully we can be back next week with more ugly, impossible to solve problems. Until then, this is Simon Barron wishing everyone a great week. Bye.